Hello, Internet family. This is Anjanette Potter, also known as Adams Red, and you are listening to the Smart Black Girls Club podcast. So today, as I promise, I'm finally getting around to it. I have had so much going on. The warfare has been real. Just to let my enemies know, I will not be quitting. So, and I say that, not that I want to give Satan any more recognition than he deserves, but sometimes you have to talk back to the devil, and so that is what I'm choosing to do today. So in keeping, you know, this is because this is late, I'm going to go ahead and go into the topic at hand. So the topic at hand today is going to be police brutality. I'm going to go into the causes for it, the reasons why, and I'm also going to go into some other underlying factors that cause police brutality to be a thing. So let me see here. There were also some things that were said during. So this is in honor of the whole Tyre Nichols thing that is going on right now, and the whole issue behind that. So when I first heard about the Tyre Nichols case, I had turned on my radio and I was listening to D.L. Hughley, and he was talking about it. So I was like, oh, okay. And so when I heard, you know, they swiftly came for the officers involved, and, you know, they seemed like they was handling it. And so I thought to myself, I'm like, okay. They really on it. Of course, I had not seen what the officers look like. If I had known that they were black cops, then that would have explained everything. Okay, for real. You know, and not that I'm saying that the black cops don't deserve every bit of punishment that they're getting, because they do. They honestly do. I'm sick and tired of cops of all colors using the black community as target practice. I'm sick and tired of both black men and black women being beat up on and bullied by the police. I'm sick and tired of the police losing sight of their duties when they come into certain neighborhoods. You know, protect and serve is supposed to be something that gets done no matter where you come and do your job. Your attitude should be the same no matter what neighborhood you come into. And so the whole issue of coming into black neighborhoods and treating us as though we're criminals before, we're pretty much treated as though we're guilty and we haven't even come close to having a trial. You know, it's just a simple, we're guilty before, we're pronounced guilty without a trial. We haven't even had a trial. You're just automatically treating us like criminals instead of getting the whole story or dealing. You know, now in some cases, force is, you know, necessary. The person may not be cooperating. They may be giving you a hard time. But in many cases, the excessive force is just that, excessive. And I'm a little tired of it. And yeah, you can report on, you know, we understand. I have two cousins that were part of Canton, Ohio's police force. So I already know firsthand. And it's funny because by the time some of these people get done with you, you think that cops only came in white, just like military veterans. I have two cousins that I know of that were part of Canton, Ohio's police force. I have a father who is a veteran. Okay. My father is a veteran. I'm the daughter of a vet. I'm the niece of a vet. My uncle was in the Navy. My son served in the military. He served in Afghanistan. About three of my cousins, Ida, Vince, Tracy. Okay, three plus, because there's probably been more that I don't know about that have gone into the military and you know done their time or served in the military. So I get a little tired of the trope that says that anybody who holds these offices must be a color other than black. Now, like I said, in the case of Tyre Nichols, and I'm going to talk about that today, he was black and they were black. There was one white officer involved, and that white officer managed to not be getting the same treatment as the black cops that, you know, brutalized Tyre Nichols. Now, for me, it does not matter what color you are. You know, when you do the acts that they did to him, they deserve every bit of what they got. But as far as I am concerned, keep that same energy when the person who is guilty is white. Because what happens is, you know, people have been complaining about police brutality for as long as I can remember. And for as long as I can remember, I've seen the difference between how black suspects are treated when they are arrested and cuffed versus how they're treated, you know, anywhere else. And, you know, like I said before, it always seems like when they want to make an example or want to, you know, really, really throw the book at someone, it usually only seems to happen when the suspects are black, which I have a real problem with. Now, I don't have a problem with them throwing the book at them when they're guilty and they're doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. When I think about the Tyre Nichols case, I also think about an episode I saw recently of Good Times. Like I said before, I've been watching a lot of old sitcoms. So I have affinity. I watched them when they were around the first time. But now I watch them as a 56-year-old mother of two grown children that I raised alone with the help of my mother and different other family members. I'm not going to act like, you know, superwoman, but yeah, you know, I did the job of a mother and father. I'm raising the two of them. I also am a 56-year-old grandmother. So wanting, you know, my grandson at some point is going to be old enough to be considered a threat by someone. Yes, my cute, cuddly little 4-year-old that I love, I'm like, gosh, can you imagine one of these days? And I thought about that with my son when I had him. And I thought about it with my daughter. Because there have been cases like, you know, say her name, which I, you know, and I'm going to talk about say her name at some point here too. Because when we talk about the narrative of police brutality, we tend to only think about black men. And we need to stop. Black women need to quit being we need to stop treating black women as though they're the bottom of the barrel. Because we are not. Black women are valuable. Okay? You couldn't have black men or black children without us. You know, it's impossible to have kids without a womb. Okay? And we are more than just a womb. And that womb is more than just a cradle for a baby. You know, that womb is the birthplace of humanity. I mean, it is where life starts. It's where life is conceived. And then, you know, incubated. Everything, if you've ever been in an intensive care unit and saw, you know, premature babies fighting for their life or babies that have all those tubes, think about the fact that everything that that hospital is doing to, you know, secure that baby's life, a woman is doing within her womb for free. Okay? So those neonatal units are designed to do everything that a, you know, woman's womb does for free. We only get in those units when they are unable to stay within the confines of the natural place, their natural incubation place, which is the mother's womb. So it is impossible to give life or have life without women. You can't do it without us. Okay? So so the information that I'm going to give to you is courtesy of Wikipedia. As I grow my media ministry, which I'm not going to stop, I will get more equipment and be able to do more thorough research. And there's nothing, you know, Google, honey, Google is your friend. Bing is your friend. When you want to look up stuff, and I, you know, have learned how to use my stuff and through my phones, be able to save information to Notebook, which if you're a Microsoft fan, Notebook is your friend. One, I think it's OneNote. Let me look here. Yeah, OneNote. So there's an app through Microsoft called OneNote. OneNote is my friend. OneNote is my thing. OneNote is just like that little, whenever you buy the little scratch notebook to take all your notes in, that's what OneNote is for me, because I can save all kind of information in it, and it's beautiful. So let me see here. So right now we're talking about police brutality. So police brutality is the excessive and unwarranted use of force by law enforcement against an individual or a group. It is an extreme form of police misconduct and is a civil rights violation. Police brutality includes, but is not limited to, asphyxiation, beatings, shootings, improper takedowns, and unwarranted use of tasers. So you saw the one thing where the woman was supposed to be using a taser and it turned out to be her gun and she shot the person. Okay, yeah. So the origin of modern policing can be traced back to the 18th century in France. By the 19th and 20th centuries, many nations had established modern police departments. Early records suggest that labor strikes were the first large-scale incidents of police brutality in the United States, including events like the Great Railroad Strike of 1877, the Pullman Strike of 1894, the 1912 Lawrence Textile Strike, the Ludlow Massacre of 1914, the Great Steel Strike of 1919, and the Hanapete Massacre of 1924. The term police brutality was first used in Britain in the mid-19th century by the puppet show magazine, a short-lived rival to Punch. In September 1848, they wrote, Scarcely a week goes by without their committing some offense which disgusts everybody but the magistrates. Boys are bruised by their ferocity, women insulted by their ruffianism, and that which brutality has done, perjury denies, and magisterial stupidity suffers to go unpunished. And police brutality is becoming one of our venerated institutions. The first use of the term in the American press was in 1872 when the Chicago Tribune reported the beating of a civilian who was under arrest at the Harrison Street station. In the United States, it is common for marginalized groups to perceive the police as oppressors. So let's go into the word oppression. Oppression is malicious or unjust treatment or exercise of power, often under the guise of governmental authority or cultural opprobrium. It is regulated to regimentation, class, society, and punishment. Oppression may be overt or covert, depending on how it is practiced. Oppression refers to discrimination when the injustice does not target and may not directly reflect everyone in society, but instead targets or disproportionately impacts specific groups of people. So I'm gonna talk about that in another date, because there are people who like to talk about reverse discrimination or reverse oppression or reverse racism. And you really cannot have reverse any of these things, because reverse, when you put your car in reverse, your car is going the opposite direction of what it would normally go. Okay, so if it's normal for you to have it in drive and go forward, reverse means it's going in the opposite direction of where it should go. So since these injustices or stuff that shouldn't be happening in the first place, you cannot have a reversal, because a reversal means, you know, you're going, you know, that the way that it's going is the normal way for it to go. And if you reverse it, what you are getting is a reaction. You know, when you talk about the Norman Lear shows, which many of us grew up on, like All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Good Times, Maude, and I think there was a couple others. So you had Archie Bunker, who was a product of his environment, a product of a very racist and abusive environment. And you have a George Jefferson, who also uses the word honky, says a lot of stuff that, you know, we tell each other not to say, or teach our kids not to say. And yes, I've heard that word many times growing up. George Jefferson's bigotry toward white people, and he constantly gave the Willises a hard time for being an interracial couple. So his bigotry was a reaction to the racism that he came across dealing with people like Archie Bunker. Good Times, you didn't see a whole lot. You saw the result of redlining. You saw the result of a lot of racial oppression, even though there weren't anybody on Good Times calling the Evanses out of their names. You saw what happens when people are regulated or redlined and not allowed to really move into a decent area, or the areas that are decent are so expensive that you pretty much have to live in a particular area. You also saw the result of a whole lot of racist policies that were meant to keep black people out of certain things. Now, if you're a Boondocks fan like mine, like I am, you saw the episode where they talked about the itis. And you remember Granddad played by, oh Lord, you remember the character of Granddad, and Granddad saying that they weren't allowed to, they didn't let black people learn CPR. And you saw Huey saying, Granddad, that's a lie, you know, like that. Because older people, some older people used to make up stories. And so I said, Granddad might not be lying, because if you go far enough back, there's a whole lot of stuff that black people were not allowed to do. So now, let me see here. So as I said earlier when I got off track, it is common for marginalized groups to perceive the police as oppressors rather than protectors or enforcers of the law, due to the statistically disproportionate number of minority incarcerations. So Hubert G. Locke wrote, when used in print or as the battle cry in a Black Power rally, police brutality can by implication cover several practices, from calling a citizen by his or her first name to death by a policeman's bullet. What the average citizen thinks of when he hears the term, however, is somewhere something midway between those two occurrences, something more akin to what the police profession knows as alley court, the wanton vicious beating of a person in custody, usually while handcuffed, and taking place somewhere between the scene of the arrest and the station house. Now, this was from Police Brutality and Civilian Review Board's A Second Look, 1966 through 1967. Sometimes riots, the 1992 Los Angeles riots, are a reaction to police brutality. So let's look at the causes. The persistence of police brutality in many nations can be linked to a collective failure of the criminal justice system. Governments enacting hard on crime policies, poor police training, and a lack of legal repercussions for officers who use excessive force against civilians all increase the likelihood of police brutality occurring. Additionally, social issues like racial discrimination and poverty can exacerbate the brutality and its effect on marginalized communities. So one thing is hard on drugs program campaigns. In nations with a reputation for having a high number of drug-related issues, including gang violence, drug trafficking, and overdose deaths, one common solution that government will enact is a collective campaign against drugs that spans the entirety of the state's establishment. Changes to address these issues encompass education, bureaucracy, and most notably, law enforcement policy and tactics. Okay, I had to pause there for a minute. So basically, I remember the crack epidemic, the war on drugs, and I also remember it feeling like the war on black people. And the reason being is because they were starting at the lower level. I've always said that, you know, we're responsible for whether or not we help distribute it. So it pays to pay attention when you are hearing about people participating in it. However, when you start talking about cartels, like the stuff that recently happened with the people who went to Mexico, now they're saying that Mexico, don't go to Mexico, okay? Or, you know, travel, they're not banning travel to Mexico, they're just highly recommending that you don't visit Mexico at this time. And it's because of the whole cartel situation. Like we said, and most of the people who have the ability to allow it to come across customs are not the local dealer that you know in your neighborhood is not the one that allows that stuff to come in. Okay, the ability for drugs to get into our get into our nation goes much higher than your local dealer. So I basically called it an attempt to look like they were doing something that they really weren't doing. Okay, so let's talk about, causes, hard on drugs programs. So with the Tyre Nichols case, and I'm going to look that up, they were part of something called Scorpion. And so from what I've, you know, my reading, and I've been reading in passing, it looks like there were also other people who complained about the treatment that they were getting based on this program. Here in Columbus, we had something called Operation Ace. And Operation Ace was basically an answer to the so-called crack epidemic, depending on who you listen to and what their take is on that. So, it basically just became a legal way to harass, you know, to racially profile Black people and stop us unnecessarily. And I remember a friend of mine's boyfriend, you know, she kept telling him, stay out the neighborhood until they're done. And he kept going and kept subsequently getting stopped. Okay, yeah, there's so many different things. So now another cause is the legal system, a type of government failure that can result in the normalization of police brutality is a lack of accountability and repercussions for officers mistreating civilians. I can't tell you the number of times that I have looked and saw something about police brutality and they found out that the officer that was guilty had, you know, a record a mile long of cases where he didn't do right by that, where he stopped people and bullied them. So while it is currently commonplace for civilians to hold officers accountable by recording them, the actual responsibility for police oversight rests heavily on the criminal justice system of a given nation, as police represent the enforcement of the law. One method of increasing accountability or police accountability has become more common is the employment of body cams as a part of police uniforms. However, the effectiveness on body cams has been called in question due to the lack of transparency shown in police brutality cases where the footage is withheld from the public. In many cases of police brutality, the justice system has no policy in place to condemn or protect police brutality. Okay. Now, there's more to this. If you want to read it, you can go under, you can go under police brutality in Wikipedia, and it'll give you more information. So let me see here. So I'm going to go into a few cases that were, actually, let me go into, the young man of the hour. The Killing of Tyre Nichols. There we go. So I'm going to go ahead and discuss the young man of the hour, because I believe I talked about all this before. It sounds a little bit familiar. I might have discussed it during my lives. So I'm going to talk about the killing of Tyre Nichols. Let me see here. So Tyre Nichols was a 29-year-old black man who was assaulted after fleeing from a traffic stop. Five black officers of the Memphis Police Department in Tennessee were all called members of the police department's specialized police unit called Scorpion. And they are now, you know, charged with murder. After the incident, Nichols was hospitalized in critical condition, where he died 3 days later. The MPD officers have been dismissed and arrested. The Scorpion unit, created in 2021 by the first female Memphis police chief, Sherilyn Davis, has been disbanded. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more, because there's been remarks that have been made about that have absolutely nothing, ridiculous remarks. So the officers claim to have stopped Nichols for reckless driving. After pulling him out of his car, they use pepper spray and a taser in an attempt to subdue him as they attempted to detain him. Nichols managed to run away to within 100 yards of his mother's house before the officers caught up to him. After restraining him, they are accused of punching him, kicking his head, and striking his back with an ASP baton for 3 minutes. Both the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation and the United States Department of Justice opened up investigations into potential police misconduct. An official autopsy has not been released. Nichols' family commissioned a preliminary autopsy, which found extensive bleeding caused by a severe beating. The five officers were arrested January 26 and charged with second-degree murder, kidnapping, aggravated assault, and misconduct. They have pled not guilty. Two Memphis Fire Service EMTs, excuse me, Lord have mercy, plus a fire department were relieved of duty and subsequently fired for their alleged failure to medically evaluate or assist Tyre Nichols. They are appealing. MPD publicly released, as you can see, my notifications are going crazy. MPD publicly released 4 edited video clips from police body cams, and a nearby SkyCop camera. In reaction to the videos, widespread protests began January 27th. 13 police officers have been disciplined, relieved of duty, dismissed, or arrested, including an officer involved in the initial traffic stop and allegedly tasing, but not the subsequent filmed assault and beating. So the people involved. So we've already discussed Tyre Nichols himself. Let's go into the police officers. The five black police officers accused of assaulting and beating Nichols in connection to the traffic stop each had 2 to 6 years of police experience. Tadarius Bean, 24, was hired in August 2020. Demetrius Haley, 30, hired in August of 2020. He was a former corrections officer, first officer at the initial traffic stop. Emmett Martin III, 30, was hired in March 2018. He was a second officer at the initial traffic stop. Desmond Mills, 32, hired in March 2017, was a former jailer in Mississippi and Tennessee. And Justin Smith, 28, was hired in March 2018. Four of the five officers had previously either been reprimanded or suspended by MPD for various offenses. All five were members of the MPD's 30-person specialized unit, hotspot policing unit known as Scorpion, street crimes operation to restore peace in our neighborhood. So now Scorpion was started by Memphis Police Chief Sherilyn Davis. In October 2021, and it was meant to deal with serious crimes. She disbanded Scorpion in the wake of Tyree Nichols' death. Scorpion unit officers drove unmarked cars, and many dressed in plain clothes and wore bulletproof vests marked police. Now, they were compared to the Red Dog unit that she commanded in 2006 and 7 as a member of the Atlanta, Georgia Police Department. The Red Dog unit, which used aggressive crime-fighting strategies in high-crime areas citywide, was disbanded in 2011 after the city agreed to settle a federal lawsuit alleging that Red Dog unit officers used excessive force in the 2009 raid at a gay bar. NBC News reported that a former member of Atlanta Civilian Review Board said it should have been clear to Davis that a tactical unit like Scorpion was prone to violating people's rights. And yeah, that now this is where I kind of have a problem. I don't really like when people put together these special units, especially if they're made up of people who already have a past history of misconduct toward the neighborhood and toward Black people in general. I personally don't think that certain jobs you should be allowed to have. I have to, agree with Chris Rock on that one. Some stuff you shouldn't be able to do and still be racist. You know what I'm saying? Like, you should not have white supremacist affiliations and still be on the police force, because I really honestly believe it will affect your job. I don't care what nobody says. I might sound ignorant, might sound whatever, but, as a person who has experienced racism for 56 years, being a Black woman, a Black woman who is not divesting from the Black community, I have experienced racism, and it is very hard for people to remain objective. You know, nobody's that objective. And so if you want to look at the videos, they have the videos available on Wikipedia, and they're also on Vimeo. So if you want to see them, you can type in killing of Tyree Nichols and go under the link that says traffic stop and death, and it has four videos available for you if you want to see them, if you haven't seen them already, because I'm a little slow in putting this up. So it says it was 2 minutes away from his home when he was stopped. How does all this happen? And like, nobody saw, nobody here. Us as a community, it's time for us to stop. Okay, I'm gonna pause for just a moment and I'll be right back. Okay, I am back. So you'll have to forgive me. I had a little girl's emergency come up. So I'm, and I don't want to mess with nobody. But yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and read this in detail. So Tyree Nichols was 2 minutes away from his home when he was stopped. Tyree Nichols was 2 minutes away from his home when he was stopped by Memphis Police Department at 8:24, January 7th, 2023. Officers Haley Martin and Preston Hemphill conducted the initial stop at the intersection of East Rains Road and Ross Road, with police vehicles surrounding his car on three sides. The body-worn camera footage released by the City of Memphis on January 27th does not show any activity earlier than a police officer responding to a stop in progress. At the stop, Haley pulled Nichols out of his car. As Nichols said, "I didn't do anything." An officer shouted, "Get on the effing ground. I'm gonna tase your A. Officers pulled Nichols to the ground. At around 8:25 p.m., a struggle began between the officers and Nichols. They attempted to force Nichols to lie on his stomach on the ground and put his hands behind his back, while threatening him, yelling expletives, in other words, curse words, and using pepper spray and a taser on him. The pepper spray also hit several of the other officers. Ultimately, Nichols broke free and ran south on Ross Road, where he was pursued by at least two officers. Two more police units arrived at the scene around 8:29 p.m. Footage showed that one officer remained at the area of the traffic stop and said, "I hope they stomp this behind." Now, when you say words like that, this is where I think a lot of people, this is why a lot of people are thinking that this was more than just a random police stop. And in all fairness, it would be easier to believe it was a random police stop if they were white, just because of the whole racism thing. But these are all black men, okay? And granted, you know, black men, you know, black people commit crimes on random black people all the time. But when you utter a sentiment like, "I hope they stomping," that's when you start thinking, well, did they know him prior to this? Was this something personal? Because I don't see, you know, somebody doing that, and it's not somebody, it's just some random that they don't know. And so it does make you wonder, you know, I'm with the people that wonder if there was something personal going on here, because it is not unusual for somebody to have a personal vendetta against somebody and be getting their boys together and deciding to jump the person. Stranger, you know, stuff like that happens all the time. Okay, so officers Bean, Mills, and Smith caught up to Nichols at 8:33 at Castle Gate Lane and Bear Creek, which is approximately half a mile away from the original stop. Footage from a pole-mounted SkyCop CCTV camera showed an officer using his leg to push Nichols to the ground, and then police officers pulled him up by his shoulders and kicked him twice in the face. The SkyCop camera lacks audio. Body cam footage showed an officer shouting at Nichols, "I'm going to baton the F out of you." The SkyCap footage showed officers pulling him into a sitting position and striking his back with a baton. And then striking him with a baton and bringing him and striking him again. After that, police officers pulled Nichols to a standing position and restrained his hands. At the same time, he was punched repeatedly in the face by officers and eventually fell to a kneeling position. But then the next minute, he appeared to be kicked again by an officer. The footage shows at least five punches to his face. Fox News reported that in the videos, he can be heard calling out to his mother before police beat him into a daze. The New York Times reported that Nichols does not appear to ever strike back at the officers. Now, Nichols was handcuffed by 8:37. He was handcuffed and limp. Officers propped him up against the side of a police car. After Nichols was on the ground, the police officers convened and shared their stories about the arrest. Accidentally hit a link. Let me go back. In the body cam footage, Michael Ruiz of Fox News reported, even though Fox News is not our favorite place, source of news, officers can be heard discussing his alleged driving, swerving, and nearly hitting one of them. One officer bragged, "I was hitting him with straight haymakers, dog," while another one exclaimed, "I jumped in and started rocketing." Medics arrived around 8:41, but did not begin to assist him until 16 minutes later. Also suspect. If you've ever had medics arrive, you know they typically try to get to you right away because every minute is precious. So on one scene, footage showed officers had issued at least 71 commands in over 13 minutes. The New York Times article described the orders as often simultaneous and contradictory, and sometimes even impossible. Citing an example where the officer who struck him with a baton was saying, give us your hands, but another officer was already manipulating his handcuffed arm. When another officer said, give me your effing hands, he had one officer pinned his arms behind his back. A second officer holding his handcuffed wrist, and a third officer punching him in the face. So, I'm gonna, you know, if you want to read the rest of the account, because it's getting very disturbing. Of course, the charges. So they were relieved of duty, which you already know. So they said the five accused officers were relieved of duty January 8th. Deputy Chief M. Hardy was the hearing officer at each of the hearings. And so at the hearing summary specific to Haley's conduct, Hardy upheld the charge that he violated MPDDR 603 information concerning police business by taking pictures in front of Nichols and sharing the photos with at least six individuals, both within the MPD and a acquaintance. That's scary to think that somebody could do all that to you and then take pictures of it with their phone and then send the pictures to other people. Hardy described each officer's conduct as unjustly, blatantly unprofessional, and unbecoming a sworn servant. So we've got mostly the gist. If you want to read the rest of it, you can. But I also want to talk about some comments. That have been made as a result. So there have been some there have been some So there have been some very misogynistic statements that have been made against black women. Once again, you will always find some fool, and it will be a fool our color, that decides that this is black women's fault. Or it's just the fault of single mamas, which also sounds idiotic. So let me first of all so a blogger named Jason Whitlock made some remarks concerning the Tyre Nichols case. Let me look here. Okay. Yeah, so Jason Whitlock went into saying that baby mama culture is the fault, is the reason why the scene where he's Team Trump, which doesn't surprise me. I don't tend to trust black Republicans that much. So let me see here. So let me go ahead and find the article. So this is the article that I found, and it's dated February 1st. And it says, after going viral on Twitter last weekend, which would have been the weekend before, Blaze TV host, this is from Blaze Media, Jason Whitlock doubled down on his assertion that baby mama culture is to blame for the death of Tyre Nichols. Whitlock blames the corruption of the traditional family for the rise of violent crime in America. The thing with Tyre Nichols, look, this thing with Tyre Nichols looks premeditated and personal, Whitlock says. This is a reflection of what's going on in urban areas across the nation. No. The five men who beat Nichols were essentially gang members in uniform. That part I would have to agree with. Okay, this is a failure of society at large. I don't agree with that. Policing unprepared children en masse in these major cities has become one of the most difficult jobs in all the world, continues Whitlock. However, Nichols should not have been put in a position where he was essentially vulnerable to five gang members in police uniforms. Now, let me tell, because that's a double-edged sword, and I'll tell you why. Whitlock attributes the rise of black crime in black communities to the matriarchal single mother family structures that are typical among that demographic. We need more families. Mama and daddy together to have to be law enforcement. He also states that if that is not the case, you are going to have the kind of chaos we see in Memphis. And it doesn't matter what color the cops are, is going to always spin out of control. So he still goes further into the matriarchal structures that have become commonplace in the Black community that have emasculated the men in these situations, which is not true. So this, like I said before, this is one of the reasons I said the current attacks on single motherhood are of the devil. Now, let me say this. I can go biblical, and often I do. As a single parent, as a person who's raised kids by myself, my own self, it is a very hard job. And one of the reasons if you're tired, your feet hurt and everything else, is because you're doing a job that was meant to be done by two people. From the beginning, it's always been God's will for two people to raise children together. However, God is not punishing you for being a single parent. And I always, whenever I hear, you know, someone, especially somebody Black, come forward and holler about single moms, it's like, okay, why don't you talk about absent fathers? Okay, why don't you talk about men who, abandon their children? And I never hear no, you know, I always hear them come for the moms. So let me go into trying to get some of this stuff, some of these people, because I had collected some of this information a while back. So let's talk about a term called massage noir. Okay, so Mr. Whitlock's comments come from a good old-fashioned location called massage noir. Now, I'm sure by now you've heard of the terms misogyny. The words misogyny or misogynist gained popularity in the 80s, for me anyway, first time I had heard the term. And it was from a book called Men Who Hate Women and the Women Who Love Them. Now, massage noir, which is what I'm going to get into. Massage noir is a term referring to misogyny. Now, let's go in here and see what misogyny is. Misogyny is hatred of, contempt for, or prejudice against women. It is a form of sexism that is used to keep women at a lower social status than men. I'm experiencing some of that now, and one of these days I'll give you some, you know, details. At a lower social class than men, much thus maintaining the social roles of patriarchy. Misogyny has been widely practiced for thousands of years. It is reflected in art, literature, human social structure, historical events, mythology, philosophy, and religion worldwide. Worldwide. Okay. An example of misogyny is violence against women, which includes domestic violence, and in its most extreme forms, misogynist terrorism and femicide. Misogyny operates through sexual harassment, coercion, forgive me, and psychological techniques aimed at controlling women, and by legally or socially excluding women from full citizenship. In many cases, misogyny rewards women for accepting an inferior status. Okay, so that's misogyny all by itself. That's misogyny all by itself. Now you may be thinking, well, what is misogynoir? So we went over what misogyny is. Misogynoir is a type of misogyny that is aimed at black women, where race and gender both play a role. I have experienced this, and it was usually out of white men, which is one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of this whole divest thing. Because, you know, I'm like, you know, white men are not that nice. And I have a real problem with black people who want to award nice points to white people simply for being white and not because they've been good or they have good character or anything like that. You're just doing it because they're white. So, the term was coined by black feminist writer Moya Bailey. So I'm going to give a little bit of information here. So Moya Bailey is an African-American feminist scholar, writer, and activist. She is noted for coining the word misogynoir, which denotes that what Bailey describes as the unique combination of misogyny and anti-black racism experienced by black women. So, Ms. Bailey is an associate professor at Northwestern University. Congratulations, Ms. Bailey. So let's go. I know I keep hitting the wrong link. So let's go back to your term. Okay. So she coined it in 2010 to address misogyny that is directed toward black, transgender, and cisgender women. In American visual and popular culture, the concept of misogynoir is grounded in the theory of intersectionality. And you know, intersectionality, we talked about that when I did 28 or 29 days of black feminism. Intersectionality analyzes how various societal identities, such as race, gender, class, age, and I'm feeling that one now, ability, and sexual orientation interrelate in systems of oppression. So many people, so his remarks against black women are deeply rooted in misogynoir, which means brother got a problem with black women. So let me go into, so she coined the phrase while she was a grad student at Emory University to discuss misogyny toward black women in hip hop music. Like I said before, I celebrate hip hop turning 50. And I'm also believing for women to have more of a say. I'm also believing for women, especially black women, since hip hop is mostly black women. I'm believing for us to start birthing record companies of our own, music companies of our own. I just recently looked at Dee Barnes' channel, and if you are not familiar, Dee Barnes is one of a few young ladies that were assaulted by Dr. Dre back in the day. So I look forward to us birthing record companies, music magazines similar to Rolling Stone or Vibe or Source. It's time for us, because the treatment that we're getting is horrible and unjust. One thing I like about having my own media ministry is that there's always room for improvement. When it's your own, you can always look and see if you're doing something wrong and do everything you can to make it better. Whether it's spending more, you know, buying more equipment, you know, like I said, I'm running a media empire out of my iPhone. So whether it's to buy better equipment, learn how to edit videos, you know, learn how to do stuff, you know, I'm doing stuff that I never thought I'd do, but it is getting me where I need to go. And it's working for me. So I'm really not worried about it. So one thing that needs to happen is, I think, you know, because it's time out for putting up with any more negativity out of the men and the mediums that we're in. I saw recently where a young lady who is a therapist decided she did not want to deal with any more male clients, which you're allowed to do. One thing about psychology that I love that is so much different than customer service is that you don't have to deal with anybody you really don't want to deal with. And so she didn't say black men, she just said men. And I can understand it when you're talking about the field of therapy, which I'm, you know, going to be going back to school to finish what I need to finish. I want to study music therapy because I do think that being a singer, music is a form of art therapy. Art therapy gives you the ability to work out your, I think this coming Monday, when I do Music Monday, I'm going to talk about what music therapy is. I don't want to get into it right now because, you know, this is a completely different subject. So let me finish here. So she coined this term while she was a student. I think it's interesting. It combines the terms misogyny and noir to denote that she describes the unique form of anti-black misogyny faced by black women, particularly in visual and digital culture. She also considered cisgender before settling on massage noir. I like massage noir better. Cisgender sounds too much. And let's face it, black men are not the only people that we get massage noir from. So Bailey and co-author Whitney Peoples described massage noir as a combination of misogyny, the hatred of women, and noir, which means black. It also carries film and media connotations. It is the particular amalgamation of anti-black racism and misogyny in culture, in popular media and culture that targets black, trans, and cis women. So for the trans women, you were included from day one on this. Massage Noir was elaborated on a 2014 essay by Trudy of the blog Gradient Layer. I'm trying to remember if I subscribed to that one. Has been accepted and used by many black feminists and cultural critics, especially in the blogosphere. So it goes into, if you want to look up the term, this is, you know, like I said, once again, Wikipedia. Because it goes on to describe, which has always been my concern about trans women, is violence. Because I've known at least two people that were beat to the point of almost dying. I'm eating peanuts. But the violence that is expressed. Like, just because born again Christianity does not support the lifestyle of being trans does not mean I do not care about trans people, that I don't care about you, don't care about you as a person. And so she describes this as trans misogyny toward black people. So you can look this up. It's a very good article, very interesting, found in Wikipedia. I'm one of my favorite sources. Very detailed and goes into what misogynoir is. I believe that this Jason Whitlock guy has a bit of that going on. How you make the, you know, some people like to make everything about black women. And let me say this. This is not the first time I used to hear these arguments. The first time I used to hear these arguments, they were out of white men, and it was toward all women. So blaming women for everything. And when I heard it before, it was aimed at the women's movement. My God, they let women vote. Look what happened. My God, look, they let women drive. What happened? My God, they let women breathe the same air men do. Oh my God, you let women in the workforce and this is what happens. They never seem to take into account the contribution that men have made to some of these societal issues. They never take into account the patriarchal rules that men have made that allow them to abuse power. I've heard people talking about having gatekeepers on social media. No, I'm not interested in having no gatekeepers around my content, because gatekeepers tend to bully, and the gatekeepers that I've been running into tend to abuse power. And tend to be involved in sexual harassment and sexual abuse and sexual misconduct, which is also even more abuse. So I don't think that's the issue. And like I said, with the Whitlocks of the world, how come we never hear y'all talk about men who abandon their children? Now, in most of the cases that I have seen that have involved police misconduct, especially toward black males, their fathers were involved. As soon as, you know, as soon as they did their little tours and had to be interviewed and talk to people, the fathers were there, very much there. So you cannot, I remember listening to comedian D.L. Hughley on his radio show, and he talked about no child has the assignment of making people fear you. Do you see what I'm saying? Whatever the reasons why these young men decided to come for Tyre Nichols the way that they did, was their own issue for coming at him. You know, whether it was personal, which if it's something personal, you know, I'm relatively old school. If you got something personal going on with somebody, you need to handle it outside your job. You don't crap where you eat. And so many people mess up jobs because of some personal mess. So they mess themselves up. They not only mess themselves up as far as their jobs, they mess themselves up because they committed a crime. You can't just beat up random people on the street. So now there's possibility they're going to be charged with, you know, second degree murder or at least first degree manslaughter. I'm thinking second degree murder because all of this looks premeditated. So, you know, getting mad at somebody or whatever. So what about the single moms that don't have sons that get pulled over? What about the single moms who raise their kids and their kids graduate college like mine did, and graduate high school like mine did, and are productive members of society like mine is? Okay, and he's not the only one. And he's not the only one. He's not the only one. Plenty of single women, especially single black women, have been raising children by themselves and have been doing a darn good job, and a damn good job doing it. So I don't appreciate his remarks at all. There also has been a little bit of a hiccup with this case because someone found, unearthed some old tweets of his, of Tyre Nichols, where he said some pretty unflattering things about black women. Now, for me, my heart goes out to his mother because I have a 34-year-old son. I feel so bad for her. To find out that you're going to outlive your child, and to find out that your child was calling out for you, you know, his last words, and that he was taken out of here in such a violent way. But I had to be like, okay, at what point do young black men stop seeing their own women as disposable? Okay, you don't know. To me, it's a cautionary tale, because as a man, as a person in this world, we are all in this life together. And you never know who you are going to need. You never know who your last hours might be spent calling out to. So it would behoove you to think twice before you go out here and put some misogynistic nonsense on your page about the very women that you may need. So, you know, I've talked and everything. I've got this up here. I've got more content that I have to record and produce this week. I have some more stuff to talk about, because I don't want to, you know, be putting stuff off and not be able to get up here and do what I do. Like I said before, for Music Monday, I'm going to discuss music ministry and music therapy. And I'm going to talk about especially music therapy, what it is, what it isn't, and what the use of it is. It's a form of art therapy, and I'm going to talk about that too. Because when you are a creative, being able to create, being able to write, being able to create content helps you, and it is very therapeutic. I can remember going to church, and like now I still participate with Columbus State Community College's vocal chorus. But I can remember going to church, and I, you know, maybe be upset about something, and by the time the rehearsal was over with, I had my answer for how I was going to handle things, and, you know, I heard from God through the Holy Spirit on how to handle situations, and I just felt better about my situation. So it is real. It is not anything crazy. It is has been a part of mental health for quite some time. I'm also going to be going live this Friday at midnight. I will announce what the topic is going to be. I think I talked about it last night, but I will talk about it again. I will discuss it again. So, you guys enjoy your week. It's Tuesday. It is Tuesday, March 14th. I will be uploading this tonight to the Anchor page. That is now Spotify Podcast, Spotify for Podcasters. So if you are looking me up, I am on Spotify for Podcasters. I believe I'm still on Apple Podcasts. I'm still on Apple Podcasts. I'm still on Google Podcasts. Pretty much anywhere where you have podcasts, if you look up Adam's Rib Media Ministry, you should be able to find me. Plus, I will be sharing my podcasts on different social media. I share on my private and Jeanette Potter page, the Adam's Rib Media Ministry Facebook page, both those pages. I also share on Reddit, on my Reddit page, which is Adam's Rib 66. You can also find my stuff on Spotify. You can also find my stuff a number of places. So I'm right now on about 9 or 10 media outlets that host podcasts. And if you type in Adam's Rib Media Ministry, you'll be able to find my podcast. So you guys have a good week. I will be posting again after this. That is me blowing a kiss to you. And I'm going to try my level best to try to get my stuff on my pod video so that I can get it posted on YouTube. Have a good day.